Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, new studies on why avocados should be an important part of your diet, and about 16 other studies, the latest on health and healing from around the world. Then we're going to hear from a doctor telling us why vaccine safety is a sham. It's a crime against humanity. Also, another vaccine doctor will tell us about what's really going on when it comes to the measles. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will explain how Big Pharma completely owns Congress. Also, some nurses were trapped at a compound in Haiti where they were helping the poor Haitians. And it's a short view of what's happening. Why isn't this in our news cycle? Why aren't we not paying attention? What's going on in Haiti and how do we contribute to it? Also, on my Friday program, I did a commentary using my own insights and those of John Whitehead to show what I consider to be the current state of our declining democracy or republic. We're supposed to be a republic, but we pretend to be a democracy. We are not. We're actually neither. We are a country controlled by oligarchs, those who can pay to play, and they are powerful. Frequently, we do not know who they are, and we never know the deals they make behind closed doors. In our state legislators, I'm going to discuss that, and in our halls of Congress in the White House. So that commentary, which was not heard by our sister stations, you'll have a chance to hear it today. Also, I'm going to share a few, just a few thoughts with Representative Cortez, because I believe that she is very well-intentioned. She has a lot of energy, but she's lacking scholarship. And it seems like she's caught into that news cycle that two, three times a day, the news go to her, she lets them know we have something to say, and she's dealing in very broad-based platitudes without thinking them through. And I'll share some thoughts about the consequences of that. Boy, is she conflating two issues. The fact that she is popular with the media and what that media can do when she becomes stale, overexposed in the media, lots of grandiose schemes, no details. So what can we do to help her? I'll share some thoughts. Also, there's some rotten things happening on Facebook concerning vaccines. They intend to delete every single comment in all the web servers that are supporting any of the people who are challenging safety in vaccines, even if they're correct. That's how far down the rabbit hole Mark Zuckerberg and his team of idiots at Facebook have gone and being in compliance with the pharmaceutical interest. We'll talk about that. So you see, we have a lot to share today. And we begin with the latest, and I'll also be taking a few of your calls. But we want to begin with the latest on health and healing, and a new study reveals fresh avocado and is substituted in the diet for oils, and it can change our lipid profiles. This is from the University of the Pacific. So the question is this: can a single ingredient from an avocado make a difference on our health? According to a study that ran for 5 years and was based upon dietary guidelines for Americans, small shifts in food choices can make a big difference, including a shift from solid fats to oils, like the oil in fresh avocados. Now, this is on the heels of this advice. A new meta-analysis considered the best evidence and the unbiased overview of the body of knowledge on a specific topic. This is published in the highly respected Journal of Clinical Lipidology, and it adds to the growing body of research that supports the use of avocados in lieu of solid fats, those are your saturated fats, to significantly change lipid profiles. The research entitled, quote, Impact of Avocado-Enriched Diets on Plasma Lipoproteins, a Meta-Analysis, looked at the 10 unique avocado studies with all of its participants and assessed what did the avocado do to their cholesterol levels. And lo and behold, if they just consume one avocado per day, they significantly reduce total cholesterol. They reduce the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, and the triglycerides were reduced. That's good, because if you ate saturated fats, except for avocados, like in meat, then in dairy, that increases total cholesterol, increases triglycerides, increases the bad LDL cholesterol. So have an avocado each day, and there's lots of ways of having it. I like just to take some thinly sliced sweet onions, marinate them overnight, and then have tomato, fresh, nice, organic tomato, and then put the onion on the tomato, put mustard on that, slice your avocado, put your avocado on top of that, and then pour lemon juice on it and some Himalayan sea salt, and that's a grazing meal. It's delicious. It kills bacteria and strep and staph and helps recolonize the good gut microbiome. It's got the good fats. It can help protect your heart. It's all good. Also, another study just out is about the effects of nutrients on gene behavior. Now, historically, there was no science that supported that what you ate would change your genes. But I wrote a book on this, and this is one of those books before its time, called Nutrition in the Mind, and then later, the Food-Mood Connection. So I actually had two books on it. And in it, I use peer-reviewed literature showing that the foods we take in and the nutrients in those foods can directly impact behavior. And this came about when I had a group of people who had high levels of anxiety and depression. This goes back 30 years. And it was 1,000 people in the study, and we divided them into two groups. We met at RFK Junior High over on the east side once a week for 6 months. And what we found is when people got off sugar and pizzas and hamburgers and hot dogs and colas and coffee, and they began to detoxify and rejuvenate and cleanse, their whole system calmed down. Those who were anxious were no longer so, and those who were depressed were no longer so. So we reversed both anxiety and depression. I would do the same study 3 years ago with similar results. But this comes to the University of Cambridge, one of the most respected universities in the world. In fact, I'll be filming at Cambridge University this week and Oxford University both, two of the world's leading authorities on the Arctic. I'm putting in the film. I'm down to the last 4 weeks, 3 weeks of filming. And then this is finished, major film. The article was published in Nature Microbiology. Now listen carefully, because this is a breakthrough. It reveals that genes not only influence metabolism, but that metabolic byproducts influence behavior of genes as well. So according to the Cambridge University in London Crick Institute, the classic view is that genes control how nutrients are broken down into important molecules. But this study showed just the opposite is true. How nutrients break down affects how our genes behave. So that means if you've got the right nutrients like vitamin C and vitamin E and coenzyme Q10 and L-carnitine, L-carnosine, and resveratrol, all the important nutrients, the B-complex, that in itself can change your genes. So that's good news. So anyhow, once again, a whole basis of science is being turned upside down. Now there's a new study out from Newcastle University, which is in the United Kingdom, showing that there is a big difference between organic and non-organic milk and meat. Now, as a vegan, I'm not saying the whole world has to, you know, or should even advocate for what I'm eating. So if you're going to make changes, and you're making the changes gradually, so if you went from hormone commercial factory farming to one that is not, one that allows free range and so it's considered organic, at least you're going to have more nutrients that are beneficial. For example, both organic milk and cheeses and meat have 50% more beneficial omega-3 fatty acids than conventionally produced. It also has lower concentrations of palmitic acid, which is a highly inflammatory acid, and myristatic acid, which is also pro-inflammatory, that are linked to increased risk of cardiovascular disease. Also, organic milk contains 40% more conjugated linoleic acid, or CLA. That's good for your heart. And organic milk contains higher concentrations of iron, vitamin E, and some carotenoids. Also, conventional milk contains 74% more of the mineral iodine and less selenium. So for those of you who do not intend to go vegan but want something that's healthier, at least that provides it for you. This was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Then we have, a discovery from University of Melbourne as well as University of York, and it's about the discovery in leafy greens. All leafy greens hold a key to your gut health. Now, critical discovery about how bacteria feed on an unusual sugar molecule found in leafy green vegetables could hold the key to explaining how good bacteria protects our gut and promotes health, and why every time you have a green juice, celery, cucumber, parsley, green apple, you're really helping yourself. The findings suggest that leafy greens are essential for feeding good gut bacteria and limiting the ability of bad bacteria to colonize in the gut by shutting them out of the prime real estate of your gut. So these researchers at two separate institutions identified a previously unknown enzyme used by bacteria and fungi and other organisms to feed on the unusual but abundant sugar, what is a sulfoquinovose, or called SQ for short, found in green vegetables. It's also found in your spirulina and chlorella. Now, any of you who have been to my retreats, any of you who've had my counseling, know that I advocate a 90-day initial cleanse. That's 3 months, that's just initial. Depending upon how toxic you are, it might take up to 2 years to really rebalance your body. But one of the reasons that these are used, especially if you use, let's say, chlorella, and use a bitter Italian leaf, which is in our, it was originally associated with something in the spinach, but then it went into the parsley family. And so if you use parsley and chlorella together, that's probably your two best single things to cleanse and detoxify bacteria. But this is now showing why. So if you can shut off the E. coli with this enzyme that is in greens, that is all to your good. And E. coli is a key to the bad colonizers needed of your gut. And so if you have your good greens, then you're going to have healthier bacteria. Healthier bacteria, healthier immune system. Healthier immune system, less disease. Also from Binghamton University in Great Britain, it's upstate New York, actually. There's a chemical that was found in candies and gums and baked goods, and it really alters your digestive cell structure and function. So the ability of your small intestine cells to absorb nutrients and act as a barrier to pathogens is significantly decreased, hampered, after chronic exposure to nanoparticles of titanium dioxide. That's a common food additive found in everything that I just mentioned. And according to research from the Binghamton University and State University of New York, these are titanium oxide nanoparticles. These are 30 nanometers across. And over 4 hours of having this in your body, then it can cause real problems in digestion. So for those of you who've been on a healthy diet and you decide to cheat and you have yourself, you know, some candy or bread, one of the reasons that you have a reaction afterwards is because your body has cleansed itself, rebalanced it, and now you have titanium oxide, which is in a lot of different foods, and that can cause adverse effects in your digestion. One more reason not to cheat. Also, finally, from University of Florence, which is in Italy, replacing modern wheat with an ancient grain, what I'll spell it for you, K-H-O-R-A-S-A-N. That is also known as Kamut, K-A-M-U-T. It does not manifest in all people as a gluten reaction, but many of us, myself included, believe that some people are having gluten reactions not because of the wheat or the protein of a specific type of wheat, but rather from glyphosate, the pesticide that is sprayed on the crops. So we're actually having a reaction to the phosphate, not just the wheat. And I'll give you an example of that. Years ago, some buddies and I purchased about 100 acres of land upstate in Goshen. That is considered the most mineral-rich soil in America. It is so rich that when you walk on it, literally the ground shakes underneath of you. You could take your hand, I've done this, and you could take it right up the elbow, right in. That's how soft it was. And so we bought this to, you know, try some organic farming. And it was extremely beneficial. And Dr. Donald Mullins, a longtime close friend of mine, who is one of the top psychologists at the Albert Ellis Center, loved going up there. We'd go up on the weekends. And right by there, there was an orchard. And there was this like big cliff. And you could look over the cliff and see all this farmland. So one day we saw that there was fruits. And so it was in the fall, so we went up there. And this was just a regular old farm. And the guy had a press there. You can actually see me in bib overhauls with a buddy of mine, Neil Kramer. And we built a press, an old press you would have found from the 1800s. At that time, I was teaching classes, if many of you, and I mean thousands of you, came up over the 14 years I had the Fertiller Farm. And every single thing that we used was old from the 16th, 17th centuries. So if a window broke, we would fix it the way someone would have done the 16th, 17th century. And if something else needed, you know, we had all this old equipment. Some I bought at auction, others we made based upon drawings and descriptions from historical books. And so we had a press. You can see the press. And so we'd pick apples, what were called downs. They had fallen on the ground, and the guy gave them to us. And I'd press apple juice, and I'd take them into my buddy, Dave, who was one of the owners of Fairway. And that was the first place in New York City to ever have fresh, organic apple cider. And that was a long time ago. That was a lot of fun. So in any case, so there's these apples. So and they weren't pretty looking because they weren't sprayed, and they were, you know, some were wormy, where the worm eats itself out, and once it eats itself out, a little scab forms over where it ate itself out. It's perfectly nutritious, but people don't want to buy something that's defective in its look. So we got all these apples. I was eating a couple apples. Now, I knew if I did eat an apple, I'd end up with probably some little irritation in the throat, possibly some runny nose. But I thought it's worth it. I'm here in nature. I'm at an old orchard. It was an old orchard. And I'm up there sitting under an apple tree looking out about 10 miles and overlooking some of the property we had bought. It was just perfect. So, but nothing happened. So I thought, wow, I thought I had an apple allergy. So the next day, I'm walking down Broadway and I see a stand and I buy an apple and I eat it and immediately all the symptoms came back. So 2 weeks later, I went back up. Same thing happened. Nothing happened when I was eating an apple. But when I came back, it did. Then I realized I'm not allergic to apples. I'm allergic to spraying on them, and the guy up there didn't spray. And so I started talking about that on my radio show, that we may be giving foods up that are completely good because of how they're processed or what's put on them. And so that was just something to think about. So anyhow, this kamut is really good for diabetics. So researchers from the University of Florence, working in collaboration from Carigi University Hospital in Florence, found that kamut, wheat, could positively impact blood insulin and glucose. And the research was part funded by a group of scientists over there, and it was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. So most people don't eat kamut, but now there's a reason why you could, especially if you're diabetic. And finally, from Coventry University in the United Kingdom, having more sex in later life could help stave off dementia. Now I know why so many people are just brain dead. Those of you who are over 50, get your libido going, share that energy, sharper cognitive function. That's what the study found. And the research suggests that this could be because during sex we experience a release of hormones such as dopamine in the brain, which are linked to feelings of reward and promote memory and learning. And so a lot of people face dementia, and most of them are no longer having sex, based on at least what I've read and the people I've counseled. So that was just something I thought would be interesting. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. We're heard worldwide. And I thank you for sharing what you hear. The pharmaceutical industry is feeling so threatened by all of the backlash from the adverse effects of vaccines that it is now going on a campaign to try to both censor people who have any statement, even if 3.5 million women whose children were diagnosed with autism after vaccines, they're being dismissed out of hand. What does that tell you is us about a society? Some women will trust their experiences, others we won't. And that is shameful. But also, these women have had a double negative. First, they've lost the benefit of having a healthy child that they could be with and raised that would become a part of their extended family. And next, they're then told that something's wrong with them for suggesting there's an adverse drug reaction. Have you ever seen the list of adverse effects on drugs? It's huge, especially vaccines. Let me put it a different way. If you were to go into your doctor's office, and if you were to take everything that's in a vaccine and put it into a teaspoon, just have them shoot the syringe right into a teaspoon, and say, "Doctor, would you put this in my mouth?" The doctor could lose their license if they did so, because they're putting in known contaminants like mercury or aluminum, known neurodestructive elements. Not a single element in a vaccine helps a person's body, not one. Nor have they ever. But it's okay to bypass all your different immune systems and put it right into the bloodstream of a baby that doesn't even have a fully developed immune system. The only way a baby develops a full immune system is if it has breast milk from its mother. So now they want to censor all comments, and we've gotten documents that they have set up groups to go out and attack any physician or scientist who questions the safety and efficacy of vaccines. So the next time those idiots over at CNN or the complete cop-outs at MSNBC want to have on a so-called expert to talk about vaccines, just imagine there's a high probability that person is a paid shill, agent provocateur from one of the vaccine manufacturers or one of their front groups or foundations or think tanks. So what should we do? We better act fast, because they could do this week. It's going to be imminent. We should take all the available information we have, proven information, about what's wrong with vaccines, and we should share it. Share it with everyone you have. Share it with every member of Congress. Share it with every member of your state legislature. Now, we have 52 different original articles, all fully documented, fully footnoted, fully referenced, and fully legally and vetted, as long as vetted with scholarship as well. We have 4 documentaries. Share those. But also share any of the other legitimate vaccine-challenging groups as well. Share their information. Because very shortly, you're going to find out you're not going to be able to do that. This is a brief comment to Representative Cortez. There was a very famous stage presence back in the 1900s. And she said, this was Lillian Russell, she said, be careful about being so often in the public eye because you can rub it raw. Every single day you're popping up and making statements, and there certainly is some merit in some of those statements, but they're not fully thought through. There is no sense of scholarship. There's no sense of objectivity. There's just making a statement, as if a statement in and of itself is enough to cause legislation. Also, at this point, you should have a basic understanding of how Congress works. And you have had a lot of gaffes, and everyone's given you a pass on not knowing even the basics, saying we had 3 departments and the presidency. Well, there is no department of presidency. There's 3 branches in the executive branch, and is not the presidency branch, and it can be influenced by many other factors. So I would suggest you slow down. Just, you're going awful fast, and you're going to make some mistakes, and they're going to be held against you. The best I hear out of Washington is that if you keep going at the rate you're going, you'll still be able to get some people to listen to you, but you're not going to have any impact upon legislation. And people who are very wise about this will understand the mistakes you're making and exploit it to their gain against you. When you talk about socialism, you talk about something that I don't believe you thought through. If I'm wrong, correct me. But socialism is not the absence of capitalism. It's not one or the other. In fact, you couldn't have socialism unless you also had a viable acceptance of the construct that everybody, no one's excluded, the rich, the poor, all pay taxes at a very high rate. It could go anywhere from 50 to 70%. No one's allowed because of their power to get out of it. You also have to understand that in a lot of countries, they have socialism and it works because they also have capitalism and it works. Someone has to actually make the damn money. This seems to be a no-brainer, but it seems to be ideologically a wall. There's your wall. Let me give you examples. No country in the world is 100% socialistic. They're all mixed. China also incorporates communism, Marxism, and capitalism in equal amounts. Its Politburo is much like the Russian Politburo. Its central committee is communist to the core, but also it makes all of its money off capitalism. Right now it's investing trillions of dollars. No one knows how much because it's keeping it secret. They've suggested $3 trillion. It could go as high as $15 trillion for their new Silk Road, both on the water and across land. And everywhere they're going in Africa, in Arabia, up through Libya, back through Europe and the Mediterranean, they're giving billions of dollars to countries and their governments to establish ports, to establish new major markets. That's capitalism. But controlling all of it, that's communism. But they're offering benefits to the public, that's socialism. It's one way that they get more people working and they have more positive influence around the world. In the communist mind, it's simple. We'd rather build a gigantic factory to make something or gigantic farms to grow something than to put a military base on your land. We do just the opposite. We want to put a military base and the heck with anything else. Now, the government manages and controls the economy. Many of the domestic companies are owned and run by the government with front groups. Although the Chinese economy has become more geared towards capitalism and it's deep in debt. In fact, if this was any other country in the world, it'd be bankrupt. But it's not, because it also has massive reserves of gold and it can print its own money. It's still officially socialist. So life in China, if you belong to the Communist Party, if you're part of its ruling elite and make your money off capitalism, building hotels and manufacturing centers, and that's all capitalism, then you spread that by keeping other things like property taxes, which are virtually non-existent in China, you keep all that low by providing quality education to the people. So for those people, socialism in China works. But if you're a Christian, if you are an Uyghur, if you're any one of the other religions, oh, you're repressed. And so in some respects, the average person accepting all these controls over their life, spying on every aspect, being graded whether you're a good citizen or not based upon what you purchase, what you read, and they know everything you do. In fact, if you have debt, that will show up on everyone's app wherever that person goes. So if you're in a restaurant, the person has debt, you know exactly how much debt in there to be shamed. That's totalitarian. Now you got totalitarian in on top of communism and on top of Marxism and on top of socialism, all in one country. Then you have Denmark. It's just the opposite. Denmark has a wide range of welfare benefits that they offer their citizens. They also have the highest taxes in the world. Equality is considered the most important value in Denmark. And small businesses, there's your capitalism, are thriving. 70% of all the companies have 50 employees or less. So, small businesses, capitalism, pay the big taxes, 70%, so that they have free education and free health care and maternity leave and other benefits. So that's it's a hybrid. It's two systems working together. Now, speak to someone who lives in Denmark. And more often than not, they're going to say it's an awesome place to live. The people are very progressive. They're highly educated. Taxes, yes, are high. But they think we like it because we're not putting money into a military-industrial complex or to a pharmaceutical-industrial complex or to a medical-industrial complex. Instead, we put money into education, into health prevention and health care. And so no matter how old you are in Denmark, no one goes broke because of this. Another country very few people know much about is Finland. It has one of the world's best educational system with no tuition fees and also gives free meals to their students. And the literacy rate is 100%. Finland also has one of the highest standards of living in the world. And like Denmark and other European countries, equality is considered the highest virtue and what is most valued. So no one can go without while someone else takes their share. So equality. And yet, yeah, they pay high taxes, but if 100% of your country is educated, then go to Finland if you want to have an intelligent conversation about anything. You don't have ADHD. You don't have autism high rates. You don't have all the problems we have. You don't have seniors living in poverty and depression and killing themselves. You don't have any of that in Finland. Now, beside Finland, you have the Netherlands. And the government controls over the economy is at a minimum. Because people said, oh, if you have socialism, you have government control. Not true. And the Netherlands are an example of government control is minimum. But a socialist welfare system remains. And by the way, the lifestyle in the Netherlands is very egalitarian and organized. But closest to us is Canada. And Canada also has mostly a free market economy. There's your capitalism, but has a very extensive welfare system that includes free health care and free medical care. and Canadians remain one of the most open-minded and liberal society, more liberal than Americans. And Canada is ranked as one of the best top five countries to live in by the Human Development Index rankings. And Quebec, I've been there many times giving lectures and doing media, is the most socialist in Canada, with nationalized industries like power and agriculture, and those are worker-owned. So you're not going to have people saying, I can't turn on the heat because I can't afford it. Yeah, you can if the workers own it. Sweden is a mixed bag. Sweden has made one really, really serious error in judgment. It assumed that by opening its doors, good, for immigrants who were forced out because of warfare, mainly in North Africa, Libya, for example, Mali, that they would show that they would extend their spiritual and liberal values to others. Good for them. What they did not account upon is you better understand the culture, not the religion, the culture. I'm going to do a whole show on this coming up. I have a friend that was in the Peace Corps, traveled around the world, lived in African countries for almost 35 years. And the stories I was told, some were heartwarming and others were heartbreaking. And one is the country that has a lot of immigrants going to Sweden. The men don't work, they don't have to. In fact, one of the reasons they don't work is because, let's say, this was an actual example, a person opens up a food stand. Okay. There's lots of fruit in that country and vegetables. Your family always gets everything for free. So all of your relatives can all come and take your food. But what if you have no food left to sell? And that's very easily possible. So a lot of people just say it's not worth it. And that would also be true if a person had a car dealership or whatever they have. But then who does all the work? The women. Now, here's the life in this particular country. Mind you, there are 54 countries in Africa. This is only one, but it's not the only one. The women get up in the morning. They have to make sure that their children are taken care of, their husbands taken care of, breakfast is done, and housekeeping's done. Then they go to work. They might work in a place where they might have a little business. Then they come home for lunch. They make the lunch. They clean up after it. They go back to work. They come back at the end of the day, and they have to make dinner, and then they have to take care of the kids, do their laundry, clean up the place, and then if the kids are in school, go over their homework, and then they go to bed. During the day, the husband was spending time playing checkers and or chess or whatever they want to do because there's no compunction, no requirement for them to work. And when the social worker was there, she was warned, at no time are you to ever interfere and talk with women about how they feel about this imbalance and lack of equality in the efforts and faculty, because it's their culture. It's not yours. You're not a missionary. You're not here to tell them that, you know, there's a better system. And she was warned. Now, what do you think happens when that country's people go to another country that part of the assimilation process is that, you know, we allow people to come in who can assimilate and be a part of the larger fabric of our society? And these people are not going to assimilate. Their values, their views, their reality is different. Now, if you can't handle that, then what you're going to have is in Sweden is 171 no-go zones. You go into their area, you're going to get hurt. So on the one hand, Sweden is bedeviled by a system that is broken down and is not about to change because their people say it doesn't matter where they come from or what their background or what they're not willing to do, we still have to be an open society. Fine, that's their view. And there are others who are saying, shouldn't we at least try to understand who would be the best people coming into our country if so many people need to come, who would assimilate and be a part of the fabric and contribute? Because all those other people who have worked their whole lives in the socialist system are now seeing a huge amount of what they're spending going to people who refuse to work. That should be a dialogue, an open, honest dialogue that they should have. They can't even have that dialogue in Sweden. The media won't allow it. So that's one of the problems they're facing. But in any case, Sweden does have a very large welfare system, But due to his high national debt, it requires much government intervention in the economy. In fact, in Sweden, approximately 90% of businesses are privately owned. There's your capitalism, but with very tight regulations. And the provision that all workers be a part of a union, and the unions are politicized and extremely powerful. It ranks higher than the United States as one of the most innovative nations. So its system has worked to make it innovative, to make it a place where you have longer lives and greater health care than the United States. But a big problem with Sweden is subsidizing people for not working, and workers can take up to 570 days, paid days, off at one time. Now, even they call it a 570-day year, but there's only 365 days in a year, so they just keep running it. And that means that a whole lot of people are living off other people's tax money. But this isn't really a problem of socialism, so don't criticize socialism for this. This is bad government policy. Now, the income tax rate is 55%. People say, but that's not too bad. And the income tax of 55% of the gross national product is also coupled with sales taxes. Ah, sales taxes and property taxes and excise taxes and tariffs. Yeah, let me give you an idea of what it's like to have what is called a value-added tax, or VAT. It's 22.5% of items sold on various goods, including food. So you're giving a high percentage of your money for taxes. Then on top of that, you got 22.5% every time you buy an item. And the total ownership of public goods by the Swedish government is 64%. That's very high. It's closing in on 70%. And so you are really heavily taxed in Sweden. And there's a whole lot of areas in Sweden that are no-go zones. And they're not having open and honest debate. It's all been politicized. And so watch them to see how the government handles it. Again, this is not a criticism of socialism. It is a criticism of poor government. Probably your best idea would be Norway. The government controls certain key aspects of the national economy, and they also have one of the best welfare systems in the world, with Norway having one of the highest standards of living in the entire world. But they also have that because a lot of businesses thrive there, especially small businesses. There's your capitalism working for the common good and therefore benefiting everyone. Ireland also, by the way, most people are not aware of this. The Irish have arguably one of the best welfare systems in the world, with unemployment checks higher than the average than the Danish or the Swiss. About 25% of Ireland's gross domestic product goes towards paying for the welfare system, as compared to 15% in America. And also you have a highly literate group of people. You have politically aware people. You have a high level of consciousness. You have a lot of family values. You have friendship. There's a whole lot to recommend the Irish. And that's not because I'm biased, because my mother's Irish. My whole family on my mother's side is Irish. We tracked it back to the 1500s, but because they're damn good people, in spite of all that they've gone through because of Great Britain, which is not a good country. I'm not even going to mention those assholes. Anyhow, we go over now to New Zealand. Now, New Zealand is not a socialist country, but the welfare system in the country is very wide-ranging, offering support for housing and unemployment and health and child care and education as well. Therefore, New Zealand has many of the characteristics of a socialist country, even while it remains a free market society. But there's some of the best welfare system in the entire world until Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama destroyed it was Libya. Libyans had zero debt. Every single person in Libya was guaranteed a home. Every single person had the best medical care free, best health education in the world. If they couldn't give you an education at one of their universities, you could go to Harvard, Yale. They would pay everything, living expenses, travel, tuition, everything. You get one to car, they subsidize it. You get fuel, 14 cents a gallon. You wanted food, you got it. Every barrel of oil they sold, one of the finest oils in the world, that's why we invaded them, went into the public, and the public then was able to share in that. So every single time Libya sold any oil, you benefited right into your bank account. Gaddafi hadn't even been in power for the last 4 years. That's how stupid mind-numbingly stupid we are to think that we were invading someone who was killing his own people. He didn't kill any of his own people. That was all set up by the CIA and the National Security Agency. And the people involved should be held accountable as war criminals. In any case, they won't be. They'll be rewarded with some, maybe a second Nobel Prize. Who knows? That's how much value I think the Nobel Prizes have today. But in any case, Libya was the highest nation in gross domestic product and savings and education and longevity and freedoms. And they also had, instead of Gaddafi running the country, they had over 10,000 committees. Every area of the society was controlled by local people and women. If you as much as insulted a woman in Libya, you could go to jail. They had more freedoms in Libya for women, more respect, honoring them, than any other nation in the Middle East. So there's a good example of a combination of capitalism and socialism working. Venezuela, until we interfered, yes. But also I'm also holding Hugo Chavez partly responsible. He really loved and cared for the poor. He was the first person in over 100 years to give them food and food co-ops and free education and medical care. But he did not spend that money when it was pouring in at $125 a barrel. He did not spend it on new infrastructure that would be sustainable off oil, meaning have other ways the economy could grow without oil. He didn't do that. Bolivia, Syria under Assad, strengthened their social agenda and saw rapid improvements in social conditions after doing so. So there's very little connection between economic performance and welfare expenditures. And some of these countries are proof that, such as Denmark and Finland, even though both countries are more socialistic than America, the workforce remains stronger. But there are some disadvantages. Socialism relies upon the cooperative nature of humans to work. It ignores those within a society who are competitive, not cooperative. Competitive people tend to seek ways to overthrow or disrupt society for their own gain. Capitalism harnesses this greed is good drive. Socialism pretends it doesn't exist. It does. Socialism doesn't reward people for being entrepreneurial, but its entire function of this ability to give away so much money comes from that. And the government has a lot of power, way too much power in my opinion. What if your government leaders become corrupt like ours all are? And also, even America's founders included promotion of the general welfare in the Constitution to balance capitalism's flaws. It instructed the government to protect the rights of all to pursue their idea of happiness as outlined in the American Dream. It's the government's role to create a level playing field to allow that to happen. That can no longer be done in the United States. Remember, factors of production are owned by, in socialism, everyone. In capitalism, individuals. And in fascism, powerful individuals. Factors of production are valued for the usefulness to people with socialism, for profit in capitalism, and nation building in fascism. The allocation decided by a central plan in socialism, law of demand and supply, the free market in capitalism, a central plan in communism, and a central plan in fascism. And from each according to his ability in socialism, market to size in capitalism, and value of to the nation in fascism. So that just gives you a little better idea, because a lot of people are talking about something they clearly are not understanding. Now we're going to take a moment to replay a comment that I gave the other day, because this is what we're not dealing with in America. And until Ms. Cortez and others deals with this, nothing they're proposing is going to happen. Listen in. As many of you know, I'm very concerned that America is becoming now a full-fledged police state. And I think that we had better take an honest look at what we're doing. How many times have you heard people say that we're exceptional? Well, we have been at different times for different reasons. But what about this? What John Whitehead says, quote, "There's absolutely no evidence to support the statement that America is the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, third in medium household income, number four in labor force, number four in exports. We lead the world in only three categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending per where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, and 25 of them are allies, end quote. So life in America has become a gut-wrenching, soul-sucking, misery-drenched, demoralizing existence for many. We have managed to survive crackdowns and clampdowns and shutdowns, slowdowns and shootdowns, standdowns, knockdowns, putdowns, breakdowns, lockdowns, takedowns, slowdowns, meltdowns, and never-ending letdowns. We've been held up, stripped down, faked out, photographed, frisked, fracked, hacked, tracked, cracked, intercepted, accessed, spied on, zapped, mapped, searched, shot at, tasered, tortured, tackled, trussed up, tricked, lied to, labeled, libeled, leered at, shoved aside, saddled with debt, not of our own making, sold a bill of goods about national security, tuned out by those representing us, tossed aside and taken to the cleaners. We've had our freedoms turned upside down, our democratic structures flipped upside down, in our house of cards left in shambles. We've had our children burned by flashbang grenades, our dogs shot, and old folks hospitalized after accidental encounters with marauding SWAT teams. We've been told that as citizens we have no rights within 100 miles of our own border, now considered constitution-free zones. We've had our faces filed in government databases, our biometrics cross-checked against criminal databases, and our consumerist tendencies cataloged for future marketing overtures. We've seen the police transform from community peacekeepers to point guards for the militarized corporate state. From Boston to Ferguson and every point in between, police have pushed around, prodded, poked, probed, scanned, shot, intimidated, and the very individuals, we the taxpayers, whose rights they have were hired to safeguard. Networked together through fusion centers, police have surreptitiously spied on our activities, snooped on our communications, used high-tech devices provided by the Department of Homeland Security. We've been deemed suspicious for engaging in such dubious activities as talking too long on a cell phone, stretching too long before jogging, dubbed extremists and terrorists for criticizing the government, for criticizing vaccines, and suggesting it is tyrannical or oppressive, and subjected to forced colonoscopies and anal probes for allegedly rolling through a stop sign. We've been arrested for all manner of so-called crimes that never used to be criminal at all, let alone uncommon or unlawful. Behavior: letting our kids walk to a playground alone, criminal. Giving loose change to a homeless person, criminal. Feeding the hungry, criminal. Living off the grid, criminal. We've been sodomized, victimized, jeopardized, demoralized, traumatized, stigmatized, vandalized, demonized, polarized, and terrorized, often without having done anything to justify such treatment. Blame it on a government mindset that renders us guilty before we've even been charged, let alone convicted, of any wrongdoing. In this way, law-abiding individuals have had their homes mistakenly raided by SWAT teams that got the address wrong. We've been railroaded into believing that our votes count, that we live in a democracy, that elections make a difference, that it matters whether we vote Republican or Democrat, and that our elected officials are looking out for our best interest. Truth be told, we live in an oligarchy. We live in a police state. We live around sociopaths. We live around degenerates. We live around people who have no moral compass at all. We live in a society that is basing itself and pride upon identity politics. Politicians represent only the profit motives of the corporate state. They're the ultimate pimps. And if nothing else, let us accept that they will never change, but let's at least ask them to dress up in a pimp outfit and drive a pimp mobile all over Washington and every place else. So at least when we see that, we'll know who they are, because they're nothing except pimps. We know them. We know them all too well. There is no discernible difference between red and blue politics, because there's only one color that matters in politics, that's green. We've gone from having privacy in our inner sanctums to having nowhere to hide, with smart pills that monitor the conditions of our bodies, homes that spy on us with smart meters and monitor our electric usage and thermostats and light switches that can be controlled remotely, and cars that listen to our conversations and track our whereabouts. Even our cities have become wall-to-wall electronic concentration camps, with police now able to record high-def video of everything that takes place within its city limits. We've had our schools locked down, our students handcuffed, shackled, and arrested for engaging in childish behavior like a food fight, our children's biometrics stored, their school IDs chipped, their movements tracked, and their data bought, sold, and bartered for profit by government contractors. All the while, they are treated like criminals and taught to march in lockstep with the police state. We've been rendered enemy combatants in our own country, denied basic due process rights, held against our will without access to an attorney or being charged with a crime, and left to molder in jail until such a time as the government is willing to let us go or allow us to defend ourselves. Our entire government apparatus is one giant cesspool. All the agencies, all the politicians, all of the department heads, one stinking, slimy, degenerate cesspool. We've been rendered enemy of the state. We've had the very military weapons we funded with our hard-earned dollars used against us, from unpiloted weaponized drones tracking our movements on the nation's highways and byways, and armed vehicles, assault rifles and sound cannons and grenade launchers in towns with little to no crime, to an arsenal of military-grade weapons and equipment given free of charge to schools and universities. We've been silenced, censored, forced to conform, shut up in free speech zones, gagged by hate crime laws, stifled by political correctness, muzzled by misguided anti-bullying statutes, and pepper sprayed for taking part in peaceful protest. We've been shot by police for reaching for a license during a traffic stop, reaching for a baby during a drug bust, carrying a toy sword down a public street, and wearing headphones that hamper our ability to hear. We've had our tax dollars spent on $30,000 worth of Starbucks for Department of Homeland Security employees, $630,000 in advertising to increase Facebook likes for the State Department, and close to $25 billion to fund projects ranging from silly to the unnecessary, such as laughing classes for college students and programs teaching monkeys to play video games and gamble. Yeah, that's what we've become. We've been treated like guinea pigs, targeted by the government and social media for psychological experiments on how to manipulate the masses. We've been tasered for talking back to police, tackled for taking pictures of police abuse, and threatened with jail time for invoking our rights. We've been arrested by undercover cops stationed in public bathrooms who interpret men's shaking off motions after urinating to the acts of lewdness. We've had our possessions seized and stolen by law enforcement agencies looking to cash in on asset forfeiture schemes, our jails privatized and used as a source of cheap labor for mega corporations, our gardens smashed by police for seeking out suspicious-looking marijuana plants, and our buying habits turned into suspicious behavior by a government readily inclined to believe that citizens are terrorists. We've had our cities used for military training drills with Black Hawk helicopters buzzing the skies, urban shield exercises overtaking our streets, and active shooter drills wreaking havoc on unsuspecting bystanders in our schools and shopping malls. We've been told that national security is more important than civil liberties, that police dogs' noses are sufficient cause to carry out warrantless searches, that the best way not to get raped by police is follow the law, that what a police officer says in court will be given preference over what video footage shows, that an upright posture and acne are sufficient reasons for a cop to suspect you of wrongdoing, that police can stop and search a driver based solely upon anonymous tip, and that the police officers have every right to shoot first and ask questions later if they feel threatened. You getting the point? When was the last time anyone in the media told you this? They won't. They're part. So that's, for those of you who didn't hear my commentary on Friday, you just heard it. Unless we deal with these issues, all the other issues coming out of Washington will have no meaning, no bearing upon our life. I'll talk about corporate socialism in America, where corporations are socialized in their profits and or in their losses, but they're able to keep all their profits to themselves. That'll be on an upcoming show. Thank you all for listening, and have a good day.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together, don't we?